Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news.
What you're about to hear are some of the highlights.
What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drags my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now up to the city, we're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. That our sunlight is not for franchise, and wish the bastards drop down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. I'll be in prison or on the TV. I'll say the sunlight dragged me here. Bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's Wednesday the 14th of January. We're going to bring you the normal roundup of Indie Media Newswire reports from across the world. But first, I'm afraid, some sad news.
Tom Handel, the British peace activist shot in the head by the Israeli army last April while pulling two Palestinian children to safety in Rafah, has died in hospital. Tom, who was on a life support machine, died of pneumonia after being in a coma since being shot. An Israeli soldier has recently been charged on 6 counts, including one of aggravated assault. Tom's family now want a murder charge. Last March, an Israeli bulldozer crushed US activist Rachel Corrie to death in Rafah as she tried to protest against the demolition of a house, while British cameraman James Miller was also shot dead on the 2nd of May. We're now going to go to an interview with Jeremy Hardy, who's on the line now. We're just going to go across to Jeremy. Is he there?
No, he doesn't.
Okay. Well, we can come back to that in a minute. And we'll go to some other news in that case.
Okay. On the 8th of January 2004, Waterside Court, the Home Office Immigration Office in Leeds, which processes asylum claims, had both the car park and pedestrian gates locked whilst protesters blockaded both entrances and leafleted pedestrians and drivers. Banners were displayed in front of the building with slogans of "No to destitution, asylum to all those who seek it," and "No borders, freedom of movement." The protest lasted 2 hours and ended peacefully. The protest was to raise awareness and draw attention to the effects of Section 55 of the government's Nationality, Immigration and Asylum Act 2002, which came into force a year ago to the day, as we reported last week. Over the past year, this legislation has made 7,500 asylum seekers destitute, many of whom then became homeless. The legislation gave the Home Office powers to deny asylum seekers access to support services if they did not apply for asylum as soon as reasonably practicable. Subsequent legislation has attempted to separate asylum seekers from their children if they refuse to leave the country, as well as revoking their right to appeal. This legislation is being challenged under Article 3 of the European Convention on Human Rights. One participant in the Leeds action said, "Leeds is a multicultural city and it is important to let refugees know that they are welcome here. We have a duty to give people access to public services who are fleeing from their country because of violence against them, wars or lack of work. They aren't coming here out of choice. The weather's awful. We should at least show them some human kindness." You can get more information on the website leedsarc.org.uk.
Such thing as a Superman. There ain't no such thing as a Superman. You was on the Nile. You went to see great Egypt fall. Only fell down to the ground. Yes, and you was out there on the corner. We'll be right back.
now we're going over to that interview with Jeremy Hardy. Hi, Jeremy, are you there?
Hi, I'm here, yeah.
Hi. Obviously, the situation of Tom's death is, you know, it's just dreadful. And I understand that you're calling for a vigil this evening to tribute to Tom. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, we want as many people as possible outside Downing Street because we think the focus should be on the British government now. The Israeli government's done a certain amount of window dressing to try and appear to show willing, but the British Prime Minister at the moment has done nothing to condemn or make any comment on what was effectively the cold-blooded murder of a British citizen. Tom's been in a coma since he was shot 9 months ago, and everybody's always known that he wasn't going to pull through, but the British government's said nothing publicly about that. We now know that a soldier has been charged with aggravated assault. Now that Tom's dead, we don't know whether that will be up to manslaughter or murder. But quite clearly, this was deliberate targeting of a man. It was an advanced telescopic rifle sight fired by a sniper from 150 yards. That kind of equipment at that distance, you can hit. You can hit a button, you know, and Tom was shot in the head, and it was clearly an attempt to kill him.
So, are Tom's parents going to be at the vigil tonight?
I hope that Tom's sister and brother will be there tonight outside Downing Street. I think his parents will be exhausted. They've been up all night and clearly very distressed. But we want as many people to come along as possible and support the family. Some people will have read an article by Tom's mother in The Guardian on Saturday when she expressed her anger at the Prime Minister for saying nothing about this. And we want as many people to come down as possible to show respect to Tom, to commemorate him and to demand that the Prime Minister make some sort of statement about what's now murder.
And obviously some sort of statement about what's happening in Palestine, because this situation still goes on and the murder of Tom, I suppose, shows just how bad the situation is there every day for ordinary Palestinians.
Well, that's right, because, I mean, a British activist has been killed, an American activist, Rachel Corrie, has been crushed to death. A UN worker from Britain was shot dead, Ian Hook, and a number of other people have been injured. But Palestinians are dying every day. Recently in Nablus has been the main focus of Israeli aggression in the West Bank, Israeli army aggression. And now, actually, Israeli peace activists are being targeted, and an Israeli peace activist was shot the other week and badly injured in the legs, which prompted big demonstrations within Israel. Palestinians have obviously less profile in the world, you know, I mean, a British citizen shot will get attention here, but Palestinians are dying every day and the British government's saying nothing about that.
Okay, so is there anything people should bring to show?
Well, it'd be dark by then, so it'd be great to bring candles. If people want to make any kind of placard to commemorate Tom, to demand that the Prime Minister make some sort of statement, bring any musical instruments, anything you want to bring, but we want as many people as possible opposite Downing Street in Whitehall at 5:30 this evening.
Okay, thanks very much. And I guess Tom was a very talented photographer, so we've lost somebody that was making beautiful images.
That's right. I mean, I hope that his photographs will stand as testament to his work. I mean, the great thing is that because he has those photographs and also the diaries, at least he will always have a voice.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
And now on to other news. A European-wide day of action against refugee detention and for migrant rights has been called for the 31st of January, following a proposal made at the European Social Forum in Paris in November last year. As part of this, a big noise demonstration is planned at the Lindholm Immigration Removal Centre in Doncaster. The centre was criticised a few months ago by the Chief Inspector of Prisons, Anne Owers, in a report into asylum detention, saying that it needed fundamental and far-reaching changes. Ms. Owers, in a report, also said that detainees were not shown enough respect and were subjected to unacceptable and unnecessary random strip searches after visits, and that further, asylum seekers interviewed by inspectors neither felt safe there nor knew what was happening to them. Staff at this former prison treat detainees as offenders rather than recognising that they have not been convicted of any crime. There is a prison atmosphere in the centre, with detainees being made to wear prison clothes. Their own money is withheld from them and channeled into prison-like incentive schemes. The report also described poor food, heating and healthcare problems. One campaigner said, "By taking our protest to the gates of the detention centres, we can communicate with the people inside, sending messages of support that can break through the fences erected to keep people isolated." Further events also include a march by refugees from the Congo in London to deliver a letter to the Parliament and to the Prime Minister on the 30th, accompanied by drums and a demonstration outside the Daily Mail newspaper headquarters on the Friday evening, the 30th. There are also actions and demonstrations planned at other detention centres across the country. Meanwhile, this weekend in London, there's an evening of film and discussion put on by the campaign group No Borders. Films include an inspiring portrayal of the Woomera Detention Centre breakout that was in Australia last year, and there will be food and music as well. That's happening this Saturday the 17th at 7pm, and that's at a new squatted social centre in Kentish Town. The social centre squat is an old community centre that was due to be turned into yet more luxury flats. It was opened 1 week ago, and while there was initial concern that the owners would try an illegal eviction after they harassed and threatened the occupiers, the plans for many events are going ahead now unhindered. So the address for that evening of film is 93 Fortes Road, and that's in Kentish Town.
Stand up now, stand up now. You noble diggers all, stand up now. The wasteland to maintain, seen cavaliers by name. Your digging does maintain, and persons all defame. Stand up now, diggers all. Your houses they tear down, stand up now, stand up now. Your houses they tear down, stand up now. Your houses they tear down to fright your men in town, but the gentry must come down and the poor shall wear the crown. Stand up now, diggers all, with spades and hoes and ploughs. Stand up now, with spades and hoes and ploughs. Stand up now, your freedom to uphold, seen cavaliers are bold to kill you if they could, and rights from you to hold. Stand up now, diggers all. The gentry are all round, stand up now, the gentry are all round, stand up now. The gentry are all round, on each side they are found, their vision so profound, to cheat us of our ground. Stand up now, diggers all. The clergy they come in, stand up now, the clergy they come in, stand up now. The clergy they come in and say it is a sin that we should now begin our freedoms for to win. Stand up now, diggers all. The lawyers they can join, stand up now, the lawyers they can join, stand up now. To arrest us they advise, such fury they devise, the devil in them lies and hath blinded both their eyes. Stand up now, diggers all. Gainst lawyers and gainst priests, stand up now, gainst lawyers and gainst priests, stand up now. For tyrants they are both, in flat against their oath, to grunt us they are loath, our meat and drink and cloth. Stand up now, diggers all. We'll be right back.
possessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole, so it can be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By death and murder, they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship this god they serve, the god of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up.
The Pulitzer Prize Awards for 2003. The Pulitzer Prizes were established more than a decade ago to give recognition to the stinkiest media performances of the year. Put together by Norman Solomon and Jeff Cohen, founder of Media Watch Group Fair, to sift through large volumes of entries. In view of the many deserving competitors, they regret that only a few can win a Pulitzer Prize. And now, here are the winners of the 12 annual Pulitzer Prizes for the foulest media performance of 2003. Winner of the Media Mogul of the Year, Larry Mays, CEO of Clear Channel. While some broadcasters care about their programming, the CEO of America's biggest radio company, with more than 1,200 stations, admits that he cares only about the ads. The Clear Channel boss told Fortune magazine in March, "If anyone said we were in the radio business, it wouldn't be someone from our company. We're not in the business of providing news and information. We're not in the business of providing well-researched music. We're simply in the business of selling our customers' products."
Conservative Times for Liberal Media Award, ABC News. Over the years, ABC correspondent John Stossel became known for one-sided, often inaccurate reporting on behalf of his pro-corporate greed is good ideology. He boasted that his on-air job was to explain the beauties of the free market, received lecture fees from corporate pressure groups, and even spoke on Capitol Hill against consumer protection regulation. In May of this year, when Stossel was promoted to co-anchor ABC's 2020, a network insider told TV Guide, "These are conservative times. The network wants somebody to match these times."
And a real stinker for the Liberating Iraq Prize for Tom Brookwell. Interviewing a military analyst as US jets bombers headed to Baghdad on the first day of the Iraq War, NBC anchor Brookwell declared, "Admiral McKinn, one of the things we don't want to do is to destroy the infrastructure of Iraq, because in a few days we're going to own that country."
Coddling Donald Prize, CBS's Leslie Stahl, ABC's Peter Jennings and others. On the day news broke about Saddam Hussein's capture, Stahl and Jennings each interviewed Defence Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. In step with their mainstream media colleagues, both failed to ask about Rumsfeld's cordial 1983 meeting with Hussein in Baghdad on behalf of the Reagan administration that opened up strong diplomatic and military ties between the US government and the dictator that lasted through 7 years of his worst brutality.
One of the most prestigious Pulitzer Awards for the More You Watch, The Less You Know prize goes to Fox News Channel. According to the University of Maryland study, most Americans who get their news from commercial TV harbored at least one of three misconceptions about the Iraq War: that weapons of mass destruction had been discovered in Iraq, that evidence closely linked Iraq to Al-Qaeda had been found, or that world opinion approved of the US invasion. Fox News viewers were the most confused about key facts, with 80% embracing at least one of those misconceptions. The study also found a correlation between being misinformed and supporting the war.
Military Groupie Prize, Katie Couric of NBC's Today Show. "Well, Commander Thompson," said Couric on April the 3rd in the midst of the invasion carnage, "thanks for talking with us at this very early hour out there, and I just want you to know I think Navy SEALs rock."
And the Clear It With the Pentagon Award goes to your favourite, CNN. A month after the invasion of Iraq began, CNN executive Easton Jordan admitted on his network's Reliable Sources show, April 20th, that CNN had allowed US military officials to help screen its on-air analysis. "I went to the Pentagon myself several times before the war started and met with important people there," and said, for instance, "at CNN, here are the generals we're thinking of retraining to advise us on the air and off about the war. And we got a big thumbs up to all of them. That was important."
Noblesse Oblige Occupation Award, Thomas Friedman, New York Times. In a November the 30th piece, Times columnist Freedom gushed that "this war in Iraq is the most important liberal, revolutionary US democracy building project since the Marshall Plan." He lauded the war as one of the noblest things this country has ever attempted abroad. Friedman did not mention the estimated 112 billion barrels of oil in Iraq or the continuous deceptions that led to the noble enterprise.
And now on to news about the Media Hack Labs. Media Hack Lab, autonomous technology zone, spaces for collective learning, skill sharing, for making your own media, for the sharing and developing of free technologies and software, for battling alienation, for ongoing projects and for using diverse forms of communication to challenge the domination of capitalist mass media, for an open, inclusive and autonomous voice.
Hooray!
A new Media Hack Lab is getting started in the East End of London. Based at the Freedom Press Bookshop and Social Centre, it will be an open-access computer lab with internet access. Going beyond the preponderance of internet cafes, a hack lab is a political space used for alternative media, the use and development of free software and other emancipatory technologies, skill sharing and collective learning and community projects. This Saturday 17th, the Hack Lab is asking for donations of computer equipment. Between 1 p.m. and 6 p.m, there will be people in the lab able to take reception of donated hardware. So, if you have any old PCs, monitors, hard drives, network cards or any other spare computers or parts to give away,
or any new ones,
please bring them along on this day. The address is 84B Whitechapel High Street, London E1, nearest tube station, Aldgate East. On Sunday 18th, there's also a benefit film night, a cafe and a bar to raise funds at the new social centre, which, as we said earlier, is at 93 Fortes Road in Kentish Town. That night starts at 8 p.m. Films are going to include the epic recent film Fourth World War, Richard Stallman's Freedom and Technology, plus a screening of selected editions of the Indie Media European newsreels. There will also be food, Cuban rum cocktails, a cheap bar and Zapatista coffee.
And now two more events set for the end of the month as part of an Indie Media London Convergence. Friday the 30th of January sees an evening of report backs from the World Summit on the Information Society, which was held in Geneva at the end of last year. That was the UN summit. 2 years of campaigning under the label of media democracy preceding the summit has helped put communication rights and digital issues onto the agenda of social movements, but far from the central agenda of the official summit itself. The summit was an interesting process. There was tension between the corporate involvement and the developmental agenda. There were attempts by civil society groups to influence the official summit, but they were partially excluded from several of the major forums. There was an alternative and parallel initiative to create autonomous media spaces within Geneva, reporting on the summit itself, but also being a physical representation of some of the issues that were there, with an inclusive polymedia lab, a video project, and the ubiquitous police raid going on there. So despite all the liberal rhetoric from inside the WCIS, the development issues were effectively excluded from the agenda, as indeed were reporter Sans Frontières, who set up their own pirate radio station broadcasting from France. Civil society groups held their own events, including the World Forum on Communication Rights, and produced their own significant declaration entitled Shaping Information Societies for Human Needs, a very important document. So the evening on Friday the 30th will present a roundup of the official WCIS process from the civil society point of view and reports from the parallel and alternative events, followed by a discussion. And that's at 7 o'clock at Limehouse Town Hall, which is on Commercial Road. The following day, on Saturday the 31st, the same venue hosts an afternoon and evening devoted to developing ideas and practical initiatives for developing the indie media project within London. To start things off, there'll be some short presentations about related projects, for example the Hack Labs that were mentioned earlier, culture jamming and wireless internet projects, followed by a discussion of how and with what expectations people can collaborate together through Indie Media London. And that's starting at midday and running through till 6 in the evening. And then later in the evening there'll be film presentations and some music. For details of that, you can check out the Indie Media website, as always, indiemedia.org.uk, and click onto the London section.
Civil rights leaders are a pain in the neck. Can't hold a candle to Chiang Kai-shek. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Man, the bombers are afraid of a fight. Peace hurts business and that ain't right. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Daily News, Daily Blues. Pick up a copy anytime you choose. 7 little pennies in the newsboy's hand, and you ride right along to Never Never Land. We've got to bomb Castro, bomb him flat. He's too damn successful and we can't risk that. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. There's millions of commies in the freedom fight, yelling for Lenin and civil rights. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Daily News, Daily Blues. Pick up a copy anytime you choose. 7 little pennies in the newsboy's hand, and you ride right along to Never Never Land. Well, it seems like the whole damn world's gone wrong. St. Joe McCarthy is dead and gone. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Don't try to change my mind with facts. To hell with the graduated income tax. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Daily News, Daily Blues. Pick up a copy anytime you choose. 7 little pennies in the newsboy's hand, and you ride right along to Never Never Land. You know, John Paul Getty is just plain folks. The UN Charter is a cruel hoax. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. J. Edgar Hoover is the man of the hour. All that he needs is just a little more power. How do I know? I read it in the Daily News. Daily News, Daily Blues. Pick up a copy anytime you choose. 7 little pennies in the newsboy's hand, and you ride right along to Never Never Land.
When a was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore my corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? Your duty is to make me the mother of a pearl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. Dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow, smooth as silk, gives creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo, that's what you do to be a lady now. When I went to school, I learned to write and how to read, some history, geography, and home economy. And typing is a skill that every girl is sure to need, to while away the extra time until the time to breed. Then they had the nerve to say, what would you like to be? I says, I'm gonna be an engineer. No, you only need to learn to be a lady. The duty isn't yours for to try and run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. Remember, dear, that you're a girl. She's smart for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mum, pretend you're dumb. And that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Jimmy come along and we set up a congregation. We were busy every night, love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer look after or obey me? Remember, dear, that you're my wife. Well, as soon as Jimmy got a job, I began again. Then happy at me turret lay the year or so, and then the morning that the twins were born, Jimmy says to them, kids, your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish rag, faithful as a child. Stay at home, you got to mind the baby. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, it's something else to do. It's cook a meal, mend a sock, sweep a floor or two. I listen in to Jimmy Young, it makes me want to spew. I was gonna be an engineer. Don't I really wish that I could be a lady? I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. And I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You could buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay, you get a cook and a nurse.
Hi, people have probably read in The Guardian and heard on various radio and have seen on our Indie Media site, and that's indiemediauk.org. And we're now going to speak to John Lee from a traveller's site in Nuneaton who successfully fought off an eviction 2 days ago by burning their caravans and having a kind of protest by linking arms to protect their land. John, are you there?
Yes, I am, yes.
Hi, can you tell me just a little bit about what happened?
Basically, the bailiffs arrived and we had big fires. We've got ditches to keep the bailiffs out and we're very adamant about keeping them out.
And what's the problem? Why are you being evicted?
Because we haven't got any planning permission of where we live, but we do still own the land. And if they get us off, they've got nowhere else for us to go, so they're basically asking us then to break the law because we'd be on the roadside.
So basically, they're in effect making you homeless because of a planning legislation.
Yes, we'll be homeless, yes.
And so what's the next stage for you guys?
We're in court tomorrow in the High Court, judicial review in the Strand, on the Homelessness Act, and we're trying to get some help from the courts.
What do you know about the Homelessness Act? I mean, it's pretty draconian as far as I'm aware. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, we're gypsy people. We live in caravans. If we've got nowhere to legally park the caravans, then basically we're homeless.
So, and what happens if you park your caravans somewhere illegally?
If we park them somewhere illegally, we've got 28 days, the police come, and then we have to move on. And this is why we've bought this land, because we're sick of keep being moved on.
Right. And is there any support that you need? Is there anything you'd like? Would you like people to come to your site or anything like that to offer support? When are the bailiffs due to come back?
Over the last week with all the media, what's gone on since Monday, we've had a hell of a lot of support throughout the UK. And I'm now a member of the National Travellers Federation, which is a very big federation, and they've also got a member of Parliament that speaks for the gypsies, and there's actually something happening in Parliament tomorrow.
Right. And so is there going to be a protest there that you'd like people to go along to?
Well, if we don't get the answers what we need by the end of this week, we're still going to have another mass protest maybe on Monday.
Right. Well, we'll wish you luck with that, and well done for successfully defending your land. And
yes.
What about the children on the site, and what outcome would you like to see?
Well, the children are on the site now. There's probably about 30 children, and all in the local schools. They've been in there for the last 3 years. If we was to move, obviously the schooling would be disrupted, and it's not very good for children's future education.
So, aren't social services doing anything to protect the children on behalf of the land?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay.
But there is a minister in Coventry who was on the television last night, and he is very worried about the welfare of the children if we have to leave where we are.
Right, I see. And what outcome would you like to see?
Well, basically, we'd either get planning permission and ask the council to leave us where we are, or we're interested in buying alternative land, but we need help from the council to point us in the right direction, and if they would give us permission there, we would set up camp and build the camp ourselves elsewhere.
So what would? But you own your land.
We already own this land, and they don't want us here. So where do they want us?
Yeah, but if you own your land, what would happen to the land you owned if you were not allowed to live on it?
We would put it back to a greenbelt field, which what the judge has told us, and then we would just own a piece of greenbelt field.
It's illogical, isn't it? Okay. Well, good luck with everything, and
okay. We'll
be speaking to you again hopefully for more
all
updates
right, thank
on
you
our
very
show.
Bye
bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, this week a government scientific committee withheld its approval for commercial growing of genetically modified sugar beet and oilseed rape. However, it gave the go-ahead for Chardonnay L, a variety of GM maize owned by Bayer Crop Science. This approval removes the last major hurdle preventing the commercialisation of GM crops in the UK. If the government chooses to ignore the overwhelming public opposition, it requires just a couple of rubber stamps and the first GM crops could be in the ground this spring. Bayer says they are ready and willing and able to plant this season. However, the government advisers have warned that commercial planting is likely to result in massive civil disobedience. Thousands of people have signed the Green Gloves Pledge to take direct action against GM crops and the companies involved, or to support those that do. To sign the Green Gloves Pledge yourself, visit www.greengloves.org. Bayer itself has also been the target of a national campaign attempting to persuade it to abandon its recently acquired GM interests. For more information, see www.stopbayergm.org. For ongoing information about global resistance to GM crops, check out the IndyMedia dedicated biotech newswire on www.biotechimc.org or subscribe to the hard copy quarterly genetics update newsletter available from TOG on 01803 840098.
Now, more than 4 million surveillance cameras monitor our every move, making Britain the most watched nation in the world, research has revealed. The number of closed-circuit television cameras has quadrupled in the past 3 years, and there is now one CCTV camera for every 14 people in the UK. This increase is happening at twice the predicted rate, and it is believed that Britain accounts for one-fifth of all of the CCTV cameras worldwide. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Evidence suggests that the residents of a city such as London can each expect to be captured on CCTV cameras up to 300 times a day, and that much of the filming actually breaches existing data guidelines. We've probably heard in previous shows, we've reported that some shopping centre security guards use the cameras to track what they call socially undesirable people, such as groups of young boys or rough sleepers, around their shopping malls and then eject them from the shopping centres even though they haven't done anything wrong. Professor Norris, who's one of the people who's been compiling this report, says the use of these practices represents a shift from formal and legally regulated measures of crime control towards private and unaccountable justice. In a related story, the professional body for the UK IT industry has joined the critics of the government's proposed identity cards. The British Computer Society has called for the government to pay more attention to the costs and practicalities of its proposal to implement identity cards. Dr. Michael Radd of the BCS, who's the director of their external relations, said, "We are sceptical that identity fraud will be eradicated with the introduction of the biometric ID cards, and the possibility of duplicated biometric information must not be overlooked. Iris and fingerprint scans are not necessarily unique for each individual, with almost 100 cases of naturally duplicated identifiers existing in the UK."
And sticking with a similar sort of theme, last week there was an announcement by government ministers that there was going to be a unique identity number assigned to every UK resident as part of a £240 million scheme to compile an authoritative population register for use by government departments and agencies. The register will include the name, address, date and place of birth and sex of 58 million people, usually resident in Britain. It will replace the records held by agencies such as the NHS, the Passport Office and the Driving Licence Authority. Civil liberties groups voice concern about whether there will be sufficient data protection safeguards to stop government agencies using the huge central database to tap into confidential records held by other departments. Liberty raised questions about how the Treasury-inspired plans for the register would mesh with proposals for the National Identity Card. Barry Hugill of Liberty said, "This announcement is odd, given Home Office plans for an identity card bill. Why on earth have we now got another government department coming up with its own scheme? To all intents and purposes, the national registration number will be an identity card without the plastic. We need explanations. For more information on this case, go to the website www.stand.org.uk.
And we're almost running out of time. We're going to play out the show with an outro piece, which is an interview that's just been conducted in advance of the World Social Forum, which is due to start on the 16th, and that's in Mumbai in India. It's the third World Social Forum. You can find out more information about that on the website wsfindia.org. There's planned for live web streams and simultaneous translations in six languages. Indie Media will, of course, be reporting the World Social Forum. The main site for the reports there will be at the Indian Indie Media site, and that's india.indiemedia.org. We're almost out of time. We've failed to get time to bring you the story on the American jet that dropped the bomb in East Yorkshire, or the dummy bomb, as well as a whole host of other things, which we'll try and bring you next week. There was a report we didn't have enough time to give you about the Swiss police using rubber bullets and water cannon on an anti-globalisation demonstration, but of course we'll bring you more of that next week, I'm
sure.
Or check
out the Newswire.
Or check out the Newswire, of course. Indiemedia.org.uk has got news of that. So we're going to play out with the interview now from Mumbai. And we'll say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, bye-bye.
Frédéric Dubois. I'm in Mumbai here in India. And I'm reporting directly from the World Social Forum. We're going to make a series of reports with Darren Shore here in Mumbai. And they're going to report essentially on the World Social Forum, but also on other alternative forums to the World Social Forum. We're talking about Mumbai Resistance, which is another event, a parallel event, but also the Intercontinental Youth Camp, which is going to happen next week. So we're just 1 week ahead of the World Social Forum here in Mumbai, and the World Social Forum is an event that is going to be held from the 16th up until the 21st of January. It's a massive mobilization of activists, grassroots activists, NGO activists, and different people from the entire world. We're awaiting something like 71,000 people here in Mumbai for the fourth edition of the World Social Forum. We know that the World Social Forum originally had been created as a response, as an alternative to the World Economic Forum, which was held in Davos, Switzerland. And basically what it says is that it's an alternative to a neoliberal model. It's an alternative to imperialistic ways of seeing the world. It's also alternative voices against the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, and so on. And so 1 week before the start of the World Social Forum here in Mumbai, it's the first time it's held in India. The three first years it was held in Brazil. So there are a lot of people actually arriving and converging onto Mumbai. A lot of volunteers arriving right now and working on administrative stuff, also on accommodation. So it's really a great challenge for a city like Mumbai to have so many activists coming in from the entire world. Now, concerning the activities that are going to be held this year at the World Social Forum, there's going to be several rallies, several mobilizations, demonstrations, one of them being organized by fair trade activists, but also there's going to be a lot of activities around Dalits, so untouchables, different groups from untouchables here in India. It's actually going to be also one of the main focus, one of the main subjects, the people, the caste system here in India. And so we're talking about something like 1,200 events, seminar, conferences, and so on, happening within that week. 20 self-organized conferences. There are going to be 8 conferences per day, so bigger conferences. We're awaiting speakers like Farhad Mazar, Michael Albert, José Bové, a usual suspect, of course, Maud Barlow, and several others. There's also rumor that Chomsky is going to be in town. And basically what is interesting this year here in Mumbai is that except for the other themes that you normally see at the World Social Forum, for example, talking about media, about feminism, about global governance, peace, and different subjects like that, there is something new in this year's edition in that it touches upon issues concerning the untouchables, the Dalit, which I was talking about earlier, and also about another aspect, which is communalism or fundamentalism, because we know that here in India, the government right now is a far-right party, and the subject that are going to be touched upon at the forum really try to address this specific situation here in India. So there's a lot of talk about fundamentalism, fanatism, and also different things happening here in India specifically. So also an interesting news that I've just discovered today while visiting people that are organizing the forum. I went to the organizing office, and they told me that a lot of Pakistanis are actually coming down to Mumbai. This is really something new, that Pakistanis come to India, because we know there have been a lot of problems between both of these countries, Pakistan and India, lately. And so it's very positive to see that so many Pakistanis are converging onto Mumbai for this World Social Forum. The bad news being that a lot of Pakistanis won't even receive their visa on time, because the Indian authorities are sort of postponing the visas for a lot of Pakistanis right now. Also, if you want to check it out, there is in Pakistan, in Lahore, there's a Pakistan Social Forum also starting on Monday. From the 12th and the 13th, there's going to be a Pakistan Social Forum, so you can check that out in visiting their site. Also, if you want to have more information on the World Social Forum here in India, it's wsfindia.org. And you will also find that one of the main discussions this year here in Mumbai is to know, try to understand if the World Social Forum is a space or if it's a movement. A lot of people are saying, hey, we should transform the World Social Forums into a political movement, into something where we could actually make some recommendations and influence the agenda from different governments and so on. And there's another discourse. Other people are saying, no, we don't want to create a movement, an ideological, homogeneous movement. We want a space, just a discussion space, in which we can try to discuss alternative and keep the discussion space open, and so there's a lot of questions around that and around the continuity. So to understand what has been built in Porto Alegre in the last couple of years in Brazil, and what are we building today? So is there really a continuity between what happened in Brazil before and what is going to happen this year here in India? Now, just a few words, rapid words, on another event that is parallel to the World Social Forum here in Mumbai, is Mumbai Resistance 2004. This is really the grassroots forum, alternative to the World Social Forum. So they're a bunch of activists that have been present at the Asian Social Forum last year, and that decided that they've seen, well, from their point of view, NGOs, huge NGOs, had a too big of an influence on the agenda, and they wanted to have a space on their own just to express themselves. And so we're talking about student groups, different Dalit organizations again, the Mumbai Resistance 2004 is actually 283 groups coming together. And what is specific is actually that the focus or the orientation is very Maoist or Marxist-Leninist, which is not necessarily for everyone. And so they're saying that they're open and so on, but there is clearly a touch that is or an ideology that is behind it, which is Maoist in focus. So it's going to be a quite interesting event happening on 3 days. So the 18th, 19th, and 20th of January, the first day being a resistance to the imperialism. We'll see also Arundhati Roy, which is going to talk during that day. Also, the second day there's going to be a cultural resistance, so it's more about cultural events, culture jamming, and so on, how we can bring a message through cultural manifestations. And the third day is really a solidarity march, which is going to finish at the U.S. consulate here in Mumbai. So this is basically it for Mumbai Resistance 2004. If you want more information, you can also check out the site, mumbairesistance.org. And just to say a last word, there is an intercontinental youth camp, which is running also parallel to the World Social Forum. It's actually within the World Social Forum, which is a novelty this year. Generally, in Porto Alegre, the intercontinental youth camp ran sort of parallel to it, autonomous to it. Now it's really integrated in the World Social Forum, and there's going to be something like 20,000 youth, young people converging into Mumbai, maybe 20% international, 80% from within India. And so we're awaiting something like 500 to 1,000 people from outside of India. And people are going to sleep at that camp, but are going to organize also and try to really experience an alternative mode of organization of thinking. And there's also another event I just want to stress. It's the World Water Forum happening on the 15th of January here in Mumbai, and this event is sort of a mirror event to the one happening in Delhi from the 12th to the 14th of January in New Delhi. There's also a World Water Forum with Vandana Shiva, Maud Barlow, Tony Clark, and other people who are really working on the issue of water. So I hope this helps, and if you want to really have a better and more detailed look at the World Social Forum and an alternative point of view, we'll bring that to you in the series of reports that we're going to start on the 15th of January up until the 22nd on CKUT. This is Frédéric Dubois reporting from Mumbai.